Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here with my mum. Say hi.
Hi.
And my baby is doing the worm. What are you doing?
Breakdancing.
We're about to do the handover with my husband and he's taking her off to Dorset, but we've got a podcast and we've got an intro to do, baby Burrows. Today we have a Michelin starred chef.
He's a Michelin star chef.
He was the first chef, or it was the first pub to gain 2 Michelin stars.
Where is his pub?
In Marlow. So his pub, the Hand in Flowers, got its first Michelin star in 2012, and then he got his second Michelin star later on, and it was it's the first pub to have ever done that. He has recently, kind of famously, lost a lot of weight.
I'm going to ask him about that.
Yeah, I want to know too.
Few tips.
His name is Tom Kerridge, and this is the first chef we've had on, I've realised.
Oh, crikey. Do you think that's more daunting than a food critic?
I don't know.
Actually,
I think you were more stressed about Jay Rayner.
Yeah, I was.
Okay, the child is now rearranging the duck. I've never understood why you have ducks in the fireplace, Mum.
I don't know why. I just like them there.
Are you going to come and say hi?
Say hello.
Can you say hello?
Hello.
Can you say frog?
No.
Frog.
You can't have that on.
Such good words. Well done. Okay, will you go and play in the garden now, please?
Say bye-bye.
Say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Tom Kerridge, I met Tom Kerridge on a Radio 2 programme and he was just the loveliest guy, and basically I did the thing where I was like, I'd love you to be on my podcast. I have tried some of his recipes in his weight loss for good.
And?
They're really good. They're really tasty.
When you eat them, do you lose weight?
Yeah, obviously. Okay. It's called Lose Weight for Good. And I do want to ask him about the low fat, because he uses quite a lot of low fat ingredients. And I've kind of watched another Netflix documentary and I've heard that you should use full fat. So I'm kind of interested to see his take on that, because I heard they have higher sugar. But anyway, I don't know if it's actually open yet, but he's doing the food in the Corinthia Hotel in London. I think that's his first London spot. He's also got a butcher's and pub under one roof, which is called the Butcher's Tap. And this is all in this place called Marlow. So yeah, he's like the king of Marlow.
Oh, where is Marlow?
In Buckinghamshire.
Oh, it's Marlow, not Harlow. I was getting it mixed up.
Marlow. He's also, actually, I think he's kind of had 3 Michelin stars to his name, because his other pub, the Coach, also got Michelin star. And he runs it with his wife, Beth, who's a sculptor.
Sweet.
Yeah, and so I'm interested to see how they work together
really
as a team.
It's nice of him to coach Schlepp to South London.
I know, it is really nice. Maybe he's going to the Corinthia, who knows?
I hope the food's up to snuff.
Well, do you want to tell the listeners what you're doing?
Well, because we're doing brunch, we thought we'd do shakshuka, because it's low calorie, low fat.
Low carb.
No carb.
No, well.
Yeah, and I've also made labneh, which you've ruined part of by over-oiling it.
Okay,
but it's fine.
I would like to put this to the audience. Labneh, I always thought it's thick, obviously, but it does have like a smooth consistency. Yours was looking a little bit like over whipped cream.
Fine. I did what they told me to do. The yogurt's been dripping from my cupboard door for 24 hours.
In a muslin. It was very romantic.
Cheesecloth.
Cheesecloth.
Cool. I'm now a cheesemaker.
Just Lenny
cheese.
Ware.
The cheesemaker.
Podcaster, broadcaster, and mother and cheesemaker.
That's right.
I like it. And then actually, we thought that this would be a good time to relax and ask, if we're having a chef, we may as well enjoy them cooking a little bit. So we've asked Tom to bring a dish.
Did you ask him or did he volunteer it?
We asked.
Because we have got a cake as well.
We do have a cake. Is it the leftovers from Sadiq?
No, it's a new one.
Okay. But yeah, so we don't know what we're having for pud. So it's quite a straightforward one today. No fuss. I think we were definitely trying to not overdo it if he's still on his kind of weight loss program.
Well, I think at 11 in the morning, you don't want a full lunch either.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's a good job Alex came back from...
Alex, the doctor.
The doctor.
Who's just
Have
on
I
a night shift.
He's a doctor.
No.
He just came back and suggested put harissa in. He puts a whole pot of harissa in his shakshuka.
Okay, I don't think we need to put a whole pot in.
No, I
Have
didn't.
You got... I didn't get harissa.
I did. I put half a pot in.
Okay.
It really is good addition to a shakshuka, and I've not seen it in any other... recipes
probably because it's not shakshuka anymore, it's shit shuka.
No, it tastes really good. It's spicier though.
You don't like spice. You can have all that
labneh. No, I don't. I'll have to blow my nose.
But the labneh's got dukkah on it and some mint, and it's a nice sunny day and the baby is coming back. Hello.
Where'd she find the ball?
Is that a dog's ball?
Might be from next door.
Is that dog's ball? Yeah. No, don't eat it. Don't eat the dog's ball. Tom Kerridge coming up on Table Manners. Our first chef on the podcast.
Yeah.
No pressure. Tom Kerridge, thank you so much for being here.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. Sneaky bit of lunch.
Well, a brunch we have kind of done. I don't know if you've had breakfast already.
Kind of.
What did you have?
I had two coffees, some grapes and a protein shake. So it's kind of breakfast.
Is that what you have now?
Did you work out?
I did, yeah. I went to the gym at 6 o'clock this morning.
So
gym at six, then straight into management meetings from 7:45 and then off into here. Yeah.
Is that usual? Kind of that's just regular life now?
Yeah, there's no structure to my days. Everyone is very different. It's chaotic and it's mayhem. But we do always really try to put in between 6 and 8 hours of gym every week. So that's the one bit of
six to 8 hours. So that's more... Okay, so you're working out every day?
No, I normally
or
do
doing
at
big
least
sessions.
3 2-hour sessions, yeah.
Who, with a personal trainer?
Yeah. 3 2-hour sessions. And then when we're not doing that, we'll try and get a swim in as well. But the swim can be flexible because that doesn't matter quite what time we do that.
And is this a new thing then? Or is this what, whilst you kind of, because obviously you've lost a lot of weight and you've done book, Lose Weight for Good.
Yeah.
But is this kind of, did it all come at the same time? Or did the working out come after the
No,
weight?
The working out came, so I was always swimming. Like even before I decided to lose weight, I was always swimming, and I was swimming quite a good distance. So it's always been good for. I find it good for cardio. I find it was good for health. Mm. I mean, I was swimming about a mile every day, but then when I decided that it was time to lose weight, the idea of being getting into the gym more was becoming more productive, and also my diary was changing, so I was traveling a lot and doing a lot of different things all over the place. And if you're spending time somewhere else in hotels and doing things, they haven't always got a swimming pool, but they're more likely to have a gym. So I thought I needed to start working down that way, and then it's become, I mean, I always need something to focus on, slightly obsessive, slightly compulsive about stuff. So the gym and the numbers that you can hit in a gym, I quite like that competitiveness.
Tom, when do you have time to cook?
Well, I mean, if I run through my businesses, it's mental. It's become from being a chef to being like, if you look
a
at
businessman.
It, well, yeah. I mean, we've got a butcher's pub crossover,
butcher's
wet lead butcher's tap.
Yeah.
We've got the coach, which is a Michelin star non-bookable space in Marlow. We've got the Hand of Flowers that we opened 13 years ago, which was a 2 Michelin star space.
We're first opening. 2 Michelin star place.
The first 2 Michelin star pub.
Shall we?
Yeah. And then we're opening a restaurant in London later this year.
Well, that's got a good gym, the Corinthia
it's
Hotel.
It's got a lovely gym, yeah. It's got amazing spa.
Oh,
I mean,
my
yeah, it's
God.
Amazing.
That's
yeah.
Alex.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good spot. Well
yeah,
done. That was clever.
Yeah, that was the sole reason we signed. It was like, yeah, great, yeah. No, it's a beautiful, that's a 90 cover big British brasserie, so that's opening in September, so that's a huge workload at the minute. And then there's TV production company that we own that makes the shows. Then there's the writing of the books. Then there's the outside company. Then there's there's always a huge amount every day. So it's always very different.
Okay, so when are you finding the time to like cook, or you're just kind of having to rely on your brilliance crew around you?
Staff, you know, you build a team of people around you. Like I think any successful business or anybody who does. Is successful, it's not about the one individual, it's about people and it's team. So I have people that have been with me for over 15 years, so you know, and all key management, they stay and they grow, and that's where they take on the mantles and the spaces, and they understand the business, I suppose, brand and ethos, and the vibe and the feeling that they need to put out. And then you allow people to grow and breathe themselves, and that's really important. I think people's personal development is huge for me within the company. So as people grow as adults, they also grow as professionals, and that's an amazing space to be.
But you've got a kind of brand of kind of warm and cuddly,
yeah,
along with Michelin Star, which yeah. is high-end dining. How do you manage that? Because you're so approachable and warm and everything.
I think from the word go, all I've tried to always be is me, and that's really important. And I come from a single parent family in Gloucester, and you grow up with there's no airs or graces, and there's no, you know, I didn't learn to cook from my nan making cakes or anything like that. It was, you know, it was just a case of
where did it come from?
It came from a love of the industry first. When I walked into a kitchen as an 18-year-old, that was the space that I loved. I fell in love with the vibe, the atmosphere, the late nights, the hard work, the graft, the kind of people that, you know, it's real. It was full of like it's a bit like a pirate ship kitchens. They're just full of like
what pirates. Were you doing at 18? What was your first job?
I started washing up.
Okay.
Started washing up in a country house hotel, and then just moved through to doing a bit of cooking, doing a bit of prep work, and then decided that, you know, this is the space I want to be, because the people that I was involved with were amazing. You know, chefs, and the industry is just brilliant. It's vibrant, it's exciting, it's adrenaline fueled. There's loads of people tell you that the social life in hospitality, from the outside, people will think it doesn't exist, but the reality of it is
it's late nights, isn't it? After it's all kind of closed, yeah. You stay up and...
Yeah, and you know all the best places to get in because all your friends work in them. So you're always getting into spaces. There's always free booze floating about. It's a great rock and roll industry to be in. It's very good fun.
Why did you choose Marlow? Because you've got... Are they all in Marlow?
Yeah, they are
three
for
the
minute.
Them.
The
yeah,
three
okay.
spaces are in Marlow. So I was working and living in London for about 10 years, and we wanted to find somewhere that was a little bit more accessible for my wife to be able to make art. She's an artist, so the opportunity...
Yeah, she's a sculptor, right?
Yeah, yeah, she's a sculptor. So she was working for Sir Anthony Caro, who's a major British artist, who sadly passed away a few years ago, but she wanted to be able to make her own. And the problem that you have in London is you might be able to earn the money, but you can't afford the space for a studio, or you have to move slightly out of London where you can afford the space for a studio, but then you're not necessarily earning the money. So it's quite a difficult balance. So we wanted to set up a business where we get that, I could cook and hopefully she could make art. And Marlowe's that perfect. It's about 45 minutes on a good run. On a bad run, it's about 2.5 hours into town.
But is that what just happened?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but the reality, actually, no. But the reality of it is...
Even in a Porsche, yeah.
Yeah, even in a Porsche, yeah. You're still sat in traffic, yeah, yeah. No one moves out for you. In fact, no one lets you out.
They're just like, oh,
no one lets you out. It's even worse in a Porsche.
Yeah, they're sod off with jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but it is quite... It's an amazing space. We knew it anyway. It's very close to town. And it means that Beth, we're now very fortunate. We've been married, it'll be 18 years this year, and we've moved 12 times since we've been married.
I know, and you haven't got divorced yet. Well done.
No, I know, it's amazing. Well, we're quite good at. Yeah, we're a good team. We're a great team actually, because we have separate lives. We kind of half work together and half not. We're very involved in each other's lives, but they're both very separate.
Well, wasn't Beth involved in the Hand and Flowers at the beginning?
Yes.
It was through a grant. Of like, was it through a grant of like?
No, it was a lie. It
oh,
was. A,
is
it
that
was a, through
terrible?
A lie. It was through a. We told the bank that we were going to do an extension on a small little house that we were living in, and then we took the extension money and just took the tenancy off over a pub.
Yeah, good for you.
And then the bank had to back us, and we moved forward, and it was great. You know, the relationship with the bank is fantastic. Although we did blag them at first,
well
and
done.
It kind of worked.
Like
yeah,
it
kind of worked. Yeah, it kind of worked. They're quite happy they backed us now, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Beth ran front of house for the first, I suppose, she said she'd give me 3 years of making the business work before she wanted to move away. It was about six really in total before she got to being back into the studio full time. So that was a big push and a big effort. But now she's making work. I mean, she opened a huge piece about 18 months ago at the front of the Dubai Opera House. So it's a big 5 meter sculpture.
Wow.
So yeah. So she's now internationally. She won the International Award for Sculpture last year as well. So it's a huge, for her point of view, it's been a massive investment in time and energy, and it's now beginning to work well for her and her career.
What was it like working with each other? Like, I mean, it must have been highly, like, really stressful.
It's a mixture of two things. Like, it can be amazing, the most amazing experience, because the two of you together are pulling together to create something that's working, that's brilliant. But it also, and also you get to spend time with each other, because before I was just working as a chef and you're doing, I don't know, 80 hours a week somewhere, and you never get to see each other. But actually then working with each other was a big, it was lovely. But then there's obviously moments of, it's very difficult to find that divide between being front of house manager and head chef, or husband and wife. And sometimes that crosses over, and it's bound to, because it's, you know, kitchens and restaurants are emotional spaces. And then if it's a husband and wife team, it becomes, sometimes it was bumpy, but I have to be honest, 99% of the time it's because we work together as a team. So it works, but it isn't always fun. I think in the first year of working together, I think she probably left me free time. So it's kind of like,
but do you get to go out on a Friday night? Friday night, have a drink,
no,
relax.
Well,
or in
do
one
you
of
feel
your
very different.
Like you have
no,
to go to the
no,
restaurant.
We're all, yeah, no, we were always, we do, we try to block off Sundays. We try to make sure that we have
that's
Sundays as family day. Yeah. And then we've got 2.5-year-old son now. So it's like, I haven't drunk for 5 years, and Beth might have a glass of wine or a gin and tonic every now and then. So our social lives are completely different.
You don't drink because of, I need not to drink so I lose weight, but you just gave it up.
I gave it up. Yeah, drink was an issue. Drink had become an issue in terms of both for health wise and mental health wise as well.
Yeah.
It had become an issue. So it was a recognition of that and stopping drinking.
It's kind of when you're doing a very high pressure job like yours, I imagine you think, I'll have a glass of wine that I'll relax. And you have to find other ways of relaxing rather than depending on that, I suppose.
Yeah, relax is the wrong word. Release is the word.
Release.
So it became and it's hugely. I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, you must see it in the music world.
Like,
it's the same sort of thing. It becomes
some drink so much.
Yeah, and it's a big. It becomes a lifestyle, a work hard, play hard ethic, and that becomes a massive thing that goes on. And I mean, kitchens are. There's numerous accounts of. I mean, it's an easy place to get drugs. It's an easy place
to
drink.
Well, I was thinking
drink.
Of Anthony Bourdain,
exactly.
Died, and so tragic. But he's
it is very
had
tragic.
Huge issues all his life. With
absolutely,
mental health.
Yeah. I mean, mental health within the industry is something that it needs to be recognised, and it's a huge, because the hours are so. Not draining. Yeah, it's grueling. It's a job. It's an adrenaline fueled, adrenaline junkie kind of job. There's lots of ups and downs, and highly kind of
pressure.
Charged kitchen atmosphere, and then a release of it afterwards, and everybody going out, and it's an amazing lifestyle if you can control it.
I think it's exactly like music. It's like, you know, when you're on tour, it's this habitual thing where you have like a few gin and tonics before you go on stage, and then you go, oh, that was a good show. I don't because I'm really strict.
do you?
But no, but like I just don't. I'm a control freak, so I'm like, if I feel out of control, and I have to remember the words, but you know, other band members have a wild time. And then it'll be, oh, you had a really good show, let's have a few drinks. Oh, it was a really shit show, let's like have a few drinks. So it kind of, and it's all that late night. You end up, bedtime is 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's just usual, isn't it? So I think, and also, you know, a lot of my friends who've worked in kitchens, you know, it's a lot of coke that goes around. Well, you know, and it's just kind of because you, and the extremes, the highs are brilliant, but you don't really have time to process the lows because you already have to kind of, you're on this.
I think part of the reason is as well because your job is in nightlife. It is in an environment where where people are already out. It's not like you're working Monday to Friday 9 to 5 in an office space and then you go out the weekend. Your every lunch and dinner is always high pressured and about people having a good time, so you're involved in people's good times even though you're behind the scenes. So you're already sucked into that atmosphere, and it's quite easy for it to get out of control. But at the same point, you can't, at the levels that we cook at and the levels that we perform at, you can't be bad. Like you're saying, you don't have a gin and tonic before you go on because you need to remember the words. Well, there's lots of people that can function whilst doing it, but we have zero tolerance of drugs and alcohol throughout the day at the Hand of Flowers. Mm. I mean, if you've finished work and you go for a beer, that's fine, but there's nothing that goes on in between because you need to
How
be focused
can you
on your job.
To that though? Or do just people just know?
You just know, If someone was drinking, you'd know. Because everyone else is clean living and focused, you know. And also there's a slight generational difference now. There's a lot of young chefs that are coming through that are much more aware of the food that they're putting in their bodies, the way that they treat themselves, the way that they drink, the way that they take care of themselves. I mean, when I was 18, you quite likely have a 2-litre bottle of cider and sit in the park, you know, 18, 16.
Full bin,
you
know?
If you come from Gloucester.
Exactly. But now I think you find 18-year-olds are more likely, you know, you see them wandering up the road with a gym bag and a protein shake. You know, there's a big difference in people's understanding of what they put in their bodies.
So have
now.
You adapted your menu to go with a kind of healthy living? Or
no.
No.
Good. No.
So you still serve fish and chips?
We do,
Because I've got one of your earliest books.
Yeah.
Where it's like proper pub grub.
Yeah.
More refined, but... Like,
yeah, no, we're very dairy focused, stock sauces. We don't use sugar replacement. We use sugar and chocolate and whatever. It's just full on, I suppose, French style full fat cuisine. My personal choice. Like, not everyone needs to lose weight. Do you know what I mean? Jesse wants to come and have dinner.
That's really kind of you, but I definitely always have to watch it. I've had to watch it throughout my life.
Yeah, but you might spend 2 or 3 days eating healthily and then just go out for dinner. Yeah. Like, it's not everyone's on a diet all the time. And that shouldn't, my personal choice shouldn't be.
Well, when you go out for dinner, you've got to let go a bit, haven't you?
It is a complete lifestyle choice and balance. I think if you're on a diet and you go for dinner, there shouldn't be any letting go. There's no such thing as cheat days, I don't think. Like, if you are on, either you're on it or you're not.
So are you on the diet at the moment, or have you kind of relaxed it now that you've lost the weight?
Yeah, so I'm much more, I'm hugely conscious of what I eat. I try to eat very little in the way of sugars. I don't do very much in the way of carbohydrates. I do a little bit now, every now and then. And I suppose I get carbohydrates from fruit. I've always stuck with fruit, but I my way of eating or my lifestyle choice is just because it's not, I don't even recognize it as a diet now. It's just, I won't have a sandwich, you know. I'll have
sandwiches. Don't you think sandwiches are some of the best things on earth?
Some of the worst.
I know,
right?
they are
some of the worst. Crusty bread,
crusty bread with lovely sweet tomatoes and cheese, gorgeous cheese.
But how many sandwiches are actually like that? How many people are driving past a garage and picking something up for lunch and those sandwiches?
Yeah. So we've done, I guess
we've done shakshuka.
So low carb, we thought about
Love
you.
It.
It's kind of low carb.
Thanks,
very
mate.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
But then you brought the strawberry Bakewell. So.
Yeah, well, I thought I better bring dessert. And the good thing about strawberry Bakewell is that you can have it as a slice of dessert, but it also works as afternoon tea, goes with coffee, you can invite some friends around. If we don't eat it all, it's fine.
Well, that's very sweet. We've actually got book publishing meetings. Maybe we'll try and palm it off as our own meal.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, go for
it. Oh, this old thing, I just rustled it up. Because I thought it looked a bit sad, the shakshuka. I wanted to add halloumi just kind of in it, but you don't have to have it if you kind of want to.
I love halloumi.
Because I thought the salt and just kind of.
Halloumi is amazing.
We've had a big discussion about, I've never made labneh.
We did it now.
A cheese maker.
Yeah, amazing. Right. Yeah.
But Jesse thinks you put loads of olive oil in. I said, no, leave it as a cheese and put the olive oil on top.
Okay, I messed up, but I think that it wasn't loose enough. So I don't know why. Have you ever made labneh before?
No.
But like you've had it, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of
loose.
It's supposed to be loose.
Yeah.
I think Mum's looks like over whipped cream. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
However, the taste is lovely. But I think maybe I should have loosened it up with a little bit of water. What would you have loosened it up?
Yeah,
with?
Water. See,
because I did
water is one of those ingredients,
on
right, that so many people overlook because you always think you never use it as a cooking ingredient. But water is amazing because it's a texture alterer. But it's no flavour. It doesn't bring anything to it. It doesn't add seasoning. It doesn't do it. All it does is it works very well as a loosener. It helps emulsify things. Water is like one of the most discarded and underlooked ingredients. But yeah, I'd have let that down with water. So because well, if you think about putting the olive oil in, well, you're adding flavour.
I know, and actually, I put too much flavour. So we did two different batches, and my one is a bit crap, but that can be mixed in with the other one. When anyway, I think Mum's is slightly. Not loose that. Enough, shall we say.
Do you want to check the eggs?
Oh, no, check the eggs. Yeah. And just,
yeah,
sorry,
Tom. No problem.
Work in progress.
And you're frying the halloumi?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes, would great. You have baked it? No, I had fried it. No, fry halloumi. Halloumi's amazing.
Did you ever coat it in flour? Would you have ever?
No, but I pat it dry with kitchen roll so it doesn't stick.
Oh.
So I pat it dry, before you put it into the pan. That's what.
Oil?
Yeah. Yeah, you need oil. Yeah.
But not much. Yes.
That is a good tip. Thank you very much.
Because the water that's on it, that's the sort of thing that will make it stick.
That what makes it stick.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Right, I'll just do that. Mum, hit Tom with
me. Right. Okay, hit me with a question.
Well, Jessie says it's your last supper or if you are on death row. But I would rather say, what's your favourite meal that you love? And if you had to go away on a desert island for the next 6 months, what's the meal you'd like to have before you go?
It's two different questions. Because if you're into a way of life, like now, I do very little in the way of carbs. So if I was having to go onto a desert island...
And there's going to be no carbs because you're going to have to catch fish and eat coconuts. So
we already, that sounds like sounds like a delicious fish curry coming up there.
Wow.
No, but also there were no repercussions. Like you could just basically not even think about it as a cheat.
Okay, I think, so, like, if you were stuck on a desert island, the one thing that you definitely want is pigs on it, because you can eat...
Pigs?
Yeah, you can eat everything from a pig, like, the whole lot. Also, curing process, right? You could get salt from the sea, you could make your own bacon, you could make your own hams, you could do... And you can eat everything.
Wow.
So pork would definitely be there, because you're all going to be there a long time. Like, Parma ham takes 3 years to age, you know? If you're going to be there a long time, you can take a couple of back legs of pigs, and then you could be there for
this
a long time.
This could be the best answer to this question.
Yeah. Do you ever take...
Basically, your Bear grill.
Yeah.
Do you ever take... Well, you'd have to take curing things with you, then.
No, you've got salt there.
You think salt's the main ingredient?
Salt is the main ingredient in curing processes, yeah. Yeah, so salt. But if it was death row dinner, last one...
Yeah, all right, last dinner.
It would be fish and chips and a can of lilt.
Do you know what? You're in good company, because that's exactly what Sadiq Khan would have.
Yeah, amazing.
Minus the lilt.
Minus the lilt, yeah.
Minus the lilt.
Yeah, I mean, if it really was the last dinner, it would probably be 20 pints of Stella, I've got to be honest. Not a can of lilt. But, you know, if it was just, and then you get some reprieve, maybe last minute someone goes, no, it's not definitely, he's all right, actually.
It's all right now.
We're letting him off. Then I wouldn't feel so bad that I've had fish and chips in a can of lilt. That's what I'll go with.
And what's your favourite fish in your fish and chips?
There's so many. Favourite fish or favourite fish for frying? I mean,
favourite fish for fish and chips.
I like, if it's going to be the last meal, it's got to be turbot, which is amazing. It's the king of fish. It's amazing and it's beautiful. Texturally, it's fantastic. Deep fried, it will be absolutely stunning. Like, it's so robust.
Do you prefer turbot to halibut?
I do. See, yeah,
I love halibut.
I do.
I think if that's the king of the sea, then
halibut's
the queen. Yeah,
halibut is absolutely beautiful. They're fantastic fish, but they're not. They're very expensive.
Yeah,
they're expensive fish, and you go, well, you know, if it's on a daily basis, fish and chips is seen as kind of like a fast food. You know, if you sit down in a nice restaurant and have it, it's okay. You know, the understanding of Japanese 3-star restaurants where they do tempura, it's the same as fish and chips.
Yeah.
So you can focus on it being really good. But on a daily basis, if it was just for a fish and chip shop, a flat fish is, I think, it works beautifully. So something like Place would be amazing.
Isn't there a beer batter in one of your recipe books?
There will be beer batters. Yeah.
Because I've used your,
Yeah, they work beautifully. They're great for, quite often you use sparkling water, but the idea of getting a beer batter in, it's just an extra layer of flavour that works lovely, that works really nice with fish and chips.
And if you go on holiday, which is your favourite country to go to eat?
So, the whole of Europe is amazing. You know, there's great food in Italy, in France, in Spain. It's all, I mean, there's some absolutely mind-blowing restaurants in Spain, some great cooking. French cuisine is very much based on seasons and the tastes of and rich cooking, and it's absolutely lovely and very regional. But over the last few years, I have to be honest, and its vocabulary of the country is very small in terms of food, but when it does it properly, it's amazing. And Greek cooking, absolutely love Greek cooking. I think it's just...
Well, why has it got such a bad rap? Because it's really, I think it's great food.
I think
and I've got a little house in Greece, so we're addicted to, and Jesse got married there.
Yeah.
And I love Greek food, and yet people always go, oh, Greece, it's not
great
food.
I think because it's always been seen as a holiday resort.
Yeah.
So, you know, Spanish food at first was seen as bad, you know, when it was always cheap package holidays in the 80s. And then Greece is a holiday resort. People only know it as holiday resorts. And then, I mean, you could walk down, some Greek holiday resorts, and there's fish and chip shops and Chinese restaurants and then the Greek authentic Greek cuisine is a really bad Greek salad and some really poorly braised lamb, and you just go,
it's the best.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mum's put my lab now just to like throw me under the bus. I accept it is not as good as yours, okay, but I'm saying yours needs loosening up. You're a cow. That is not correct.
No, but
look how she hasn't even dressed mine the same as hers.
Yeah, but look, that's got too much
olive oil.
Yeah, but olive oil is flavour. It may taste delicious.
I think it's got a little too much of an aftertaste.
Mine's nicer.
See what I mean? But feel mum's texture.
Excuse me, I did it the way they said.
See what I mean, Tom?
It does look amazing. She has, there's,
she's a cow.
There's one that's decorated
with
all beautifully.
Dukkha,
yeah.
And she's basically shoved mine.
I prefer that taste.
Yeah, but...
Could it be looser? It could be looser, yeah.
There you go.
They could both be looser. They do both taste amazing, though.
Combined, maybe they'll be the perfect.
And a little bit of water mixed together will make the perfect...
Excuse me, I spent 24 hours getting the water out of it. Why would I put the water in it? Will you just explain to me?
That's a very good point.
Because that's how they told me to make it.
Yeah, but it is delicious, I've got to be honest.
The Labneh gods,
the
obviously.
The Labneh gods said...
That is delicious.
Thank you.
It is delicious. It smells amazing. I have to be honest, this is like the most beautiful, perfect lunch, this. This is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
You're so sweet.
Well, at least it's low-cal. We really did think about that because...
It's lovely. Yeah. See, the thing is, when food tastes like this, smells like this, nothing about this feels like
anymore.
It's low-carb, low-calorie.
No,
it doesn't feel like it.
You're right.
It doesn't feel like it's a diet food or dish at all, does it?
No.
I mean, it looks amazing. The fresh herbs, they're massive. Like, fresh herbs are so important.
Yeah, never too many.
All right, sorry.
Why do you think there aren't so many famous female chefs with Michelin stars?
I think...
Has Angela Hartnett got a Michelin
star? Angela Hartnett's got a star. She's amazing. Claire Smith at Core. So she's just left the restaurant Gordon Ramsay. She was head chef there for 3 years. She's just opened her own restaurant called Core in Notting Hill, and it's mind-blowing. That will win Michelin stars. Amazing. There's some phenomenal...
But not many, are there?
There's not many females in the industry. Actually, there's not enough chefs in the industry, full stop. But the females, when they get to the top, it's a very difficult decision to be making to get to being a head chef level and keep driving that forward. I think, it's like every industry. It's one that's long hours. I mean, my wife describes it going that as women, we're nowhere near as stupid. Why would we be doing that? Why would we be doing those hours and working every weekend? You know, so it's a difficult space. It's one of those places that is quite again, it goes back to the lifestyle and the adrenaline and fuel kind of space that it is. And if it suits people, then it's great. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. And it's also an age thing. I think by the time you're mid-40s, as a chef, you kind of feel that you need to have been slightly moving away from the kitchen, because you don't want to be the one that's putting the veg away on a Saturday morning or cooking their Sunday lunch and being there late Saturday night. You need to start being more management. There's a huge amount of females within the industry. There's a warmth and a care that comes from, particularly from my restaurant manager, my general manager, the manager at the coach, the two star, the one star, and my general manager are all female. So there's a warmth that comes from a hospitality point of view, but whether they want to be in the kitchen is a different thing, I think.
Are you all mates, you Top Chefs?
Yes.
So you have like a Christmas outing for Top Chefs?
Sadly not. No, we don't have enough time. But we do all meet up at things like awards dues and award ceremonies.
Do you?
And there's not like rivalry?
Not anymore.
Oh, there used to be.
Who's your best mate, chef mate?
There's lots of us that are really good friends, but one of my best friends is a guy called Paul Ainsworth, who's got a Michelin star restaurant down in Cornwall called Number Six, down in Padstow.
Oh, I hear Padstow's so brilliant for food, right? Rick Stein's there too.
Yeah,
right?
Rick Stein's there, and Paul's there with a Michelin star restaurant, and he's phenomenal. I've known him since he was 18. We used to work for Gary Rhodes together, so we've known each other a long time. But then Daniel Clifford, Claude Bozzi, Sat Baines, they're all two Michelin star chefs that are great, great friends. So that rivalry isn't there anymore. They used to be, but now we're recognised. We're all in the same industry together.
Do you ever have people over for dinner?
Do I?
Ever have people over for dinner?
At my house?
Yeah.
Not very often, because I'm never there. I mean, we sometimes Sunday lunches we'll do stuff. We have friends over on a Sunday lunch every now and then, but most of the time, I mean, if I'm there, we cook something like this for tea, omelettes, something very, very simple like that. Something that a 2.5-year-old might have a try of. That's what yeah. like, you know, that age-old problem. So there, or we'll go out as a family and go and have lunch or breakfast somewhere. So
when you're not going to, because you kind of basically are the king of Marlow. You've kind of made it. I don't know. Forgive me. I don't think it was a foodie place before your spots, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if you were being generous to it, where's like your favourite neighbourhood spot that you go to in Marlow? Like, can you name check them all? Like, just because I know, obviously, yours are hugely popular. I have friends that make a weekend out of just going around all your places.
Yeah.
But where's like one place that you'd go in Marlow?
There's a beautiful country pub just up the road called the Royal Oak in Bovington Green.
Nice.
And it really comes into its own this time of year because it's got a beautiful beer garden. Mm. So, but it's real family friendly. Mm. And you can just go out there with the kids and they've got kids menus, but it is still focused on slightly healthier food. So it's not always just like chips and fish fingers. It's things for kids to try and play about and run around in the garden. And it's a lovely, lovely, lovely place to go.
And where do you eat in London? Do you have any good spots that you like in London?
Yeah, there's so many, to be honest.
I know, it's hard.
You know, you're very lucky, you know, being here. You know, there's so many great restaurants. But, I mean, for me, I'm a big fan of Barrafina. So the idea of non-bookable turning up, sitting on a bar stool and eating great Spanish food for me is absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
This is a big thing, though, recently. About
drives me mad because it's either a queue or...
But then do you know Jackson Boxer?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I follow him on Twitter. Because
he's a friend of ours. He's a friend of mine.
He's a friend of Jesse's. He's quite political. But he was saying that they've just opened a new restaurant in East London.
They're opening it, yeah.
And he had 10 cancellations on a Saturday night.
Oh, man.
And he gave the food, he advertised, said, come and you can have it half price. Because there was no way, because it was bookings, there was no way he was going to fill it.
Mm.
And he was going to
lose. And it's a new spot.
And it's new. And he had, he bought all the food in, it was all cooked, because he had all these reservations.
No shows are a big problem where people book restaurants and don't go. And it's one of those things that I find, it's hard as a restaurant industry to be able to turn it the other way. To be able to go, like, people pay for it once they've had it. So they book, turn up, then pay for it once they've had it. But if you booked tickets for a concert or you bought tickets for a football match but then decided not to go, your seat's empty, but the game is still gone.
Mm-hmm.
For a restaurant where the margins are very small, particularly a new restaurant that's opening up, to have 10 people not turn up, if it's a 50-cover restaurant...
It was more. It was 10 tables.
It's 10 tables. I mean, it's just...
It was really awful.
Yeah, I mean...
And then one lot of people walked out and didn't pay.
What?
Have that ever happened
what,
to you?
Because of the food?
I'd never thought that could happen. They just left.
We had two people do a runner.
They did a runner
the other night from the coach. Yeah, so they said they're just going outside for a cigarette and then never came back. So
I hate that.
I know.
People be like that.
Mm. Would you remember them?
I wouldn't. The guys there would, though, yeah.
Have you seen this man?
Yeah.
Never allowed him
in. We should have put it up on CCTV, actually, who they are.
Oh, you're going to have some more.
Tom Kerridge
is having a second.
I am having seconds. Everyone? It's amazing. It tastes delicious. It's fresh.
It really
it's clean.
Is nice.
Like, this is the perfect lunch dish.
There's some more.
It is amazing.
There's more halloumi, but maybe a bit rubbery now.
No, it's cool. It's great. I love it. I'm going to say this is the perfect lunchtime dish here, mate.
Oh, thanks, mate. Okay, so our podcast is called Table Manners, and we ask everybody what table manner is their worst table manner.
Yeah.
In themselves or in others. What kind of is your room 101?
My worst table manner is... it's probably the same as everybody else's, but it's mobile phones and television.
So if I'm at home...
Like we've got a little man to sleep and then we'll knock up a quick tea. Me and Beth will, if we make the effort and sit at the table, then we'll sit at the table, we'll chat, but both of us will have our mobile phones there. Like you'll text someone, you'll do something, you'll be as well. So it's not just focusing on conversation. And it's the same as then being out for dinner. I might end up taking pictures of food or doing whatever. Like it always because mobile phone is everybody's life. But I sometimes wish that it wasn't such a part of it. For me, when we're sitting down and having something to eat, you know, that's probably my worst habit. And then everybody else's worst. Well, it probably goes back to the problem that Jackson was talking about. That people not turning up, people making bookings, reservations, and no shows, and that costs businesses a lot of money. You know, it's that understanding of, you know, if you say it was 10 tables that didn't turn up. I don't know, you know, even if they were just twos, that's 20 people.
Yeah.
So if it's a 100-cover restaurant, you look at, I mean, that's 20% of your take-ins that have disappeared that could have been there. And that's, you know, if you look, most restaurants you look at making maybe 10% gross profit is a good figure over the year. So if you, that then starts working as a loss now.
That night's worked as a loss. I might really turn to not bookings, no bookings.
Right. Would you like some of your strawberry bakewell?
Yeah, come on, let's have a slice of that.
Yeah, are you going to do it? Yeah, okay, amazing.
Absolutely. In fact, do you need hand washing up?
No.
Tom, did you make this or did someone within your kitchen make
it? Do you want a 100% honest answer?
100% honest.
I've not gone near it. I spoke to the head pastry chef at a group and said, listen, I'm going to Jesse Ware's. What should we make for dessert? And we went through a number of things. And I went, no, yeah, let's do a Bakewell because that will be lovely. And
I love your honesty.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you can't blag it.
You curated it. Oh, this looks delicious.
Thanks, mate.
What would be your go-to pudding then? Are you a sweet or a salty? Jesse, do you want some? A smidge, like exactly like Tom's.
Much more of a savoury person. Mm. Much more. The weird thing, so when I gave up alcohol, right, so when I was drinking and a lot, I never ever had a sweet tooth. And you don't recognise how much sugar you're taking in your body from alcohol. So then when I stopped drinking, all of a sudden, I found myself going, oh, do you know what? I could really do with a Mars bar. Yeah. I was like, "What? Where on earth has that come from? I've not thought that for years.
Did you also feel like I deserve it because I'm not having a drink? Or
no.
You didn't make up for like...
No, I was in a space of like when I stopped drinking and I stopped doing the sugar, I got to a point like I was like... properly beating myself up with we are not doing this. We're not like you make the decision to go for it. You got to go for it. You can't half-heartedly just go.
Can I ask something? Is your pastry chef married?
No.
Is he looking for an older woman?
Wait, he's not married. No, he has got a very pretty girlfriend.
Oh shit!
I have to say this because my book agent told me that basically, do you know you're an international sex symbol?
No. Where on earth has that come from?
People have been very excited about us having you on.
Who? See, that's the first I've heard of that.
So
has my wife been texting him?
No, this is a true thing. My agent said his
his girlfriend and all their friends were very excited about this happening, right, and that they really fancy you. And they may even share
pictures.
Why are
you saying it like that?
What? No, I'm just saying.
You should say it as if you're part of the...
Well, maybe really I am part of the WhatsApp group. You don't know.
Well, that's... That's
maybe you should be
amazing.
Doing a naked calendar.
Yeah,
next.
No, nobody needs to see that. No one needs to see that. I think that's flattering.
They're talking about it.
And that's very lovely. I think, though, like, in all honesty, a lot of it comes from being approachable. And I think that's more like...
You think sex symbols need to be approachable, Tom?
No, but I think that's what it... is, you know, I think if somebody likes you, I think you're more. It's because of a personality, not because of necessarily looks. But no, come on. I just think it's like
just
it's
take the compliment.
I'm taking the compliment. It's very kind. Thank you. And to those lovely ladies, thank them very much. That's amazing. Thank you.
This is heaven sent.
It's all right, isn't it?
The crunch. And it's creme fraiche, isn't it?
It's kind of like a vanilla creme fraiche.
That's a vanilla creme fraise.
So
it's too delicious.
So the pastry really is the key to that, right? So these are the things.
How do you get it that crispy?
Right, so you cook it for longer. And this is the thing that drives me nuts about recipes in books, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So pastry, to get that beautiful, takes around about 45 minutes of cooking, if not more, all right?
Does he cook it blind first?
Yeah, you cook it blind. But you cook it blind on a lower temperature for longer. Okay, so a long time. So quite often in cookbooks and recipes, they'll say, blind bake for 20 minutes. Well, it's never going to be like that, where you've got this beautiful, rich, dark, crisp biscuit kind of base. Mm. And that's the most important thing. Because quite often recipes are written for convenience for people to cook at home, but the reality of then taking it to the level, everything takes time. To cook good food takes ages. So it's just, this is a normal pastry recipe. It's just the process of the cooking that is different.
Okay, so to ask, because I interrupted with sex symbol comment, what is your pudding like?
He didn't mind, darling.
Yeah. I went bright red. I like very simple puddings. I like simple classics done very well. I mean, a very good creme brulee. We have one at the Hand of Flowers, and it's four ingredients, but just done very, very simply. It's vanilla, sugar, whole eggs, and double cream. And you just go, but it's the recipe, it's the process. It's the method that makes it amazing, and I love that. And then the caramelizer, it's very little sugar in the recipe, and it's whole egg, so you can taste the egg, a lot of vanilla, very little in the way of sugar, and then the caramelization on the top is very, very heavy. Right. So it's bitter. So you get this, so it's not cloyy and sweet. You get this bitter caramelization and the vanilla flavors that come through a lot more. And something like that is just perfect.
And what kind of sugar do you use at the top? Do you just use caster?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And do you let it all, because sometimes I find, and I don't know whether I like it or not, but you know when some of the sugar isn't, it's still a bit bumpy?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be like that, should it?
No.
And fine. So it's been such a pleasure to have you on this. Thank you so, so much. It's I feel like we did, you know, you're the first chef that we've had on, and we took a liberty asking you to bring something, but it's absolutely paid off. it's been a beautiful,
the best,
beautiful.
I think I've died.
Perfect.
And gone to heaven.
I know I've died and gone to heaven. Mum, look how much we've got left.
I know.
Yeah. You have to invite some friends over for coffee this afternoon tea.
Thank you so much for being on. It's been so good to see you again. And good luck with the new opening September and with obviously all your other Michelin babies.
Thank you so much for
coming.
Honestly,
it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for lunch. It was delicious. It's like the best lunch dish ever. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
I'm doing the outro on my own because my mum is sitting and eating more of Tom Kerridge's delicious Bakewell tart. come sit down. Tom Kerridge, what a guy. I feel like that was one of the kind of best... I felt like we learned a lot from that. And I think actually the meal worked really well. He was very happy about it. It had seconds.
Can I just discuss the labna for a start?
Oh yeah, sorry. You're like the expert in... friggin' cheese.
I'm a cheesemaker.
Okay,
now.
Cool.
First of all, the labna pitcher came out with a big round lump. It looked like mozzarella. Didn't look all creamy and everything. there'd be no point in putting the water in that I soaked to take out. So you're wrong about that.
And Tom's wrong then.
He is. He basically has not got it right about the labneh.
Okay, he's not a labneh.
I could tell he wasn't a labneh eater. He had loads of it, though. Did you notice?
Yeah, he's probably going to put it on his menu and loosen it up with a bit of emulsifying water.
But then you just don't need to drip it for so long because the water is the stuff that you take out.
Anyway.
Why has your cat got so needy?
Prince. Do you want to come up here?
No, he wants to be involved.
Do you want to come up here?
He thinks he's a human, not a cat. I thought he was so lovely, but so committed and hardworking and
kind.
And kind and just, he's got lovely eyes when he really is a kind, nice person. And he was so informative. I just think he was great. But I think he's so busy. He's doing so many things.
Oh my God.
God, I thought you had your finger in pies. If you pardon the expression, he had his fingers in lots of pies.
Well, I think... Yeah, that was very good for us as budding chefs.
Yeah, but he really enjoyed the food.
Yeah, he did.
You kept on... You see, Jessie, you've got to be more confident when you're cooking. I knew it was perfectly right. And then you looked at me and you said, oh, no, we need to add sausage. Sausage would have been wrong.
Well, actually, I thought about... I suggested the halloumi and did you see his eyes light up when I said halloumi?
I think he was being kind.
Mum... That was essential for the shakshuka. Essential.
For me, no.
Well.
And it starts to squeak after a very short time.
Well, whatever. It tasted great. Well done. Yeah. And well done me too.
Well
and
done
thanks
you.
For trying to throw me under the bus with my labneh. That was very mean. And there will be photographic evidence of how my mum dressed my labneh as opposed to hers.
But you put your ducker in.
No, I didn't.
And you it's did. You ducker. Shook it in. What's the woman that helps with births?
A doula.
Oh, not a ducker.
No. Not a Middle Eastern.
It was all the same
spice.
Thing.
Yeah, no.
I thought it was the same word. Well, yeah, I'm sorry I didn't dress it up, but I thought you put your duca in.
Whatever.
Know. Anyway, he was gorgeous. Absolutely wonderful.
And... we would love to hear from people that have been to his restaurants and what they've eaten there.
Jessie, the Bakewell tart.
I mean, the Bakewell tart was... That's,
other level.
That is...
That was other level.
That was, yeah, otherworldly.
Yeah.
That pastry. I thought you were offending him when you were like,
no.
Has this got
no,
thing?
No, I said, is that... Is this a, is this on something? He said, no, that's the bottom. And it was crisp like a biscuit.
It was really...
I know.
Vanilla creme fraiche, strawberries. Right, but enough from us. We better wrap this up. I've been Jessie Ware on Table Manners. And who have you been, Mum?
Your mother.
Your mother. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying this, please give us 5 stars and review. And tell us how much you enjoyed this episode. Thanks so much. Sayonara. The music you've been listening to on Table Manners is by the wonderful Peter Duffy and Peter Fraser.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.